Hello and welcome to episode 8 of The Ordinary Knitter. I'm doing something I've never done before so far in this podcast series, and I'm re-recording. I apologise for all the sound problems that people have been having, and I'm enormously grateful that people have stuck with me as I struggle to get my head round what's actually required to produce a podcast that's audible but without hiss. Getting a new computer 2 or 3 weeks ago, I say it didn't help, obviously it's been great, but it didn't help with this because suddenly settings were different and there are different integral microphones and this and that, and it's caused me some problems, but I think I have solved them. So I recorded this yesterday because I like to get the podcast out on a Tuesday if I can, but it was just so quiet. It was ridiculous. I listen to a lot of podcasts, and one of my bugbears is podcasts that are so quiet that even with putting it through a speaker, I still can't comfortably hear it. So thank you very much for being patient. And I hope that this is of a decent level. The reason I think I've been recording too low is because, depending on which device I use to listen to this, I'm conscious of a slight hiss or buzz, which I find quite annoying. So I've been trying to get rid of that, but I think all I've ended up doing is just, you know, completely flunking out on the volume. So anyway, I hope we have it solved. Please let me know if you're still experiencing problems hearing it comfortably. I've had some advice from a friend about how to get this up onto iTunes. So that's something that I will work on over the next little while, as it may well be for you as well. It's half term here, which on the one hand means I haven't got to worry about school pickup and all the rest of it, and you know, I don't have to do my normal week time routine, but at the same time it means I've got children on my hands, notably particularly my 7-year-old, who needs rather more input than my teenager. So in some ways it can be a great opportunity to get things done, and as I record this I am literally waiting for paint to dry. I keep going into the porch and staring at the paint, so I thought if I go away and re-record my podcast then that gives it just that last half hour, which I think is what it needs. And I've also put my son under pain of death not to come in and disturb me. When I was recording yesterday I was getting to the end of my tether with all the noises coming from upstairs, so he should be nice and quiet and I hope we won't be disturbed. So the main thing I've been working on recently are the socks that I'm making for my husband. As with all my socks, I'm doing them toe up, two at a time, magic loop. I'm using a pattern that I've put together myself based on other people's clever heels and toes and things. So they're coming on quite nicely. I had an incredibly busy week last week and I didn't get as much knitting done as I would have liked. But on Monday, we spent the day at Innislas Sand Dunes in Borth, which is about an hour and a half away from us. Absolutely gorgeous, really windy, but a beautiful day, and I sat outside and knitted for a few hours, so I've made good progress. Not quite ready to start increasing for the heel yet, because I do a Flegel heel, but we're getting there. And I tried them on my husband a couple of nights ago and his instant reaction was, oh, they're really comfortable. So that augurs well, so they should be fine. I reckon another week or so. When you're doing two at a time, it can feel like quite slow progress because every single thing you do for any sock you do twice in a row, but at least you know that when you've done that bit, for instance turning a heel, you've really done it and you haven't got to go and do it again. I've also increased my stash in the last week. Initially I felt a bit guilty, but at $1.99 for a 2-pack of bulky yarn, I don't think I should feel any guilt whatsoever. This is a bulky yarn from Aldi, which I have bought before. I've bought the red to make a jumper for my husband, which I think there's an image of that on my Instagram account, which is The Ordinary Knitter. I will double check and I'll put an image up of that if there isn't one already. I really liked working with it. It has a little bit of wool in it. I've actually got one. Here's one I prepared earlier. 50% wool, 50% acrylic. Now that's not bad. They're 200 gram skeins for $1.99. It's all reduced in Aldi at the moment. They're just getting rid of the dregs now. I don't suppose they'll have any more yarn until the autumn. So I got black and brown. I have already got some. Oh, I've already got some brown by the looks of it. I'm just having a quick glance at my stash. We must talk about stashes and where you keep them and why you've built up your stash sometime, but probably not today. The brown I'm going to use for making myself a hat. As you can see, I'm very cannily trying to get my winter things done when it doesn't really matter. I had a hat that I bought from somewhere and I've lost it, and I'm really sad about that because it was just great. I've got reasonably unruly, quite wavy hair with a fringe, and in the winter, for instance, when I went to the rugby, I could just stick my hair under this hat. It was a pretty standard hat, but I don't wear beanies. I look absolutely ridiculous in a standard beanie that comes down to your eyebrows. It just doesn't suit me. So this hat's main virtue, apart from the fact that it was nice and stretchy and warm, covered my ears, was it had a little peaked brim. And I have found a pattern, I found a couple actually, for a hat with a peaked brim. And what you do is cut out a semicircle, well, obviously a very sort of small, thin, more like a sort of toenail of moon, from a plastic milk bottle, a sort of supermarket milk bottle. And you insert this. I haven't looked in detail at the patterns, but essentially that's what you do to form the shape of your brim, which is all quite doable. We get our milk from the milkman, but I'm sure I could pick some up from the supermarket for the purposes of my knitting. So the brown is for that. I bought a two-pack a few weeks ago, but I was mildly nervous that it might not be enough, which is ridiculous actually, because I could probably make myself a jumper out of that much yarn, but anyway. And then I got some black as well. I talked a week or two ago about making sleep masks for my son, and my husband uses them as well, so I thought if I get some black yarn, black chunky yarn, then one of the sleep masks my husband uses, it's not a sleep mask at all, it's actually a cowl that I made for my son. But for some reason, as small children do, he really took against it and could not be induced to wear it. And my husband said, well, I'll wear it as a sleep mask, and he does, but it has a cable down the front because that's part of the cowl pattern. And he made the comment once that sometimes he leans on the cable as he's sleeping and it digs in a bit and it's not very comfortable. So I thought I could make exactly the same thing but just without the cable. So that's the theory. I've got the stash. I'll get round to doing that at some point. Generally I like to finish one project before I start researching the next. Otherwise, I've always had this belief that very organised and methodical people are actually complete shambles if you scratch the surface, and they have to be really organised and methodical in order not to sort of go under in that sense. And at least that's how I view myself, because I am quite organised. But if I'm not, if I let things slide anywhere, it's a disaster area. I just don't know what I'm doing. I'm in the wrong place at the wrong time with the wrong things. So generally I don't let myself loose researching patterns until I've finished the project I'm working on, because otherwise I just get too enthusiastic about the next project and I'm rather disinclined to finish the first one. So, but I did actually let myself start looking at a wrap, a shrug, bolero, some combination, one of the three. I mentioned before we've got this do in the summer. It's going to be outside in the evening, and I just know that what's lovely and sunny at 7 o'clock and feels like a gorgeous summer evening, by 9:30 I'm going to be feeling a little bit chilly. The dress is sleeveless and it has a crossover bodice, and then it's sort of falls away from under the bust and it's full length. It's nothing flash. It literally cost me about $7.99 from this shop in Honiton that I've mentioned before, but I love it, and I've only worn it once for a family do, and I'm planning to wear it again for this, and I want something that's going to complement it. I'll put a picture of the dress on my Instagram account at some point, maybe nearer the time, and I'm looking for something light to go with it. I think anything that's too bulky or too chunky or blunt will spoil the overall effect of this quite drapey dress. So I think probably I'm looking for possibly a shawl, although I think I might just get a bit tangled up in a shawl, maybe a bolero, something like that. But almost every single one that I look at is four-ply and lace. And I must admit, I find the prospect of making something the size of a, well, sort of small, pared down cardigan or a shawl in four ply and with a lace knitting technique a bit daunting. So I'm not sure what I'm going to do. Also, if I'm going to do it, I want to get on with it next. I should have these socks finished, where are we now, Wednesday? Another 10 days at the most. And then if I'm going to do this, I'm going to have to get on with it, because I really don't want to be rushing something that intricate and that's going to be that kind of complex to knit. Oh, and also big, I suppose, that much complexity for that volume of item. So we'll see. I have seen one or two things on Ravelry that I really like, but I'm just not sure, really. I'll get to the end of the socks, go back and look at the patterns again and just see what seems like a good idea. I also realised with a stab of horror a couple of days ago that it's my friend's birthday on the 6th of June. She's a knitter. Ordinarily, I would either make her something to eat, because she loves all sorts of nice, tasty things, but she's not much of a, I might say not much of a cook. She doesn't enjoy cooking. She won't cook interesting or intricate things for herself. So, for instance, at Christmas, I'll make her Leberkuchen or Florentines or something like that, something a bit more involved she wouldn't do for herself, or I knit her something. But unfortunately, she's had a number of health problems recently, and that's affected what she can eat. So I can't make her anything interesting food-wise, like hazelnut meringues is another sort of thing that she likes. So I thought, oh, I'll knit her something, but all of a sudden, her birthday's on Monday, and I just don't think I've got time. The most I might do is perhaps a little mat with her initial on. I mean, it's a bit uninspiring, but I think probably what I'm going to do to go with it, in Morrison's at the moment, they have these very pretty small bone china mugs with a small floral pattern on them, and I'm probably just going to end up getting her one of those. It feels like a cop-out, but they are pretty. And if I do her a mat as well to put it on, then perhaps it's not quite so bad. But I just know I have to be realistic, and there's no chance of knitting her anything by Monday that's going to be the sort of anything fancy that would actually do as just a birthday present on its own. One year I made her over knee socks, so maybe I've stored up some points in heaven on that and I can get away with something small this year. Something I mentioned briefly before is technique, and I was wondering if anybody else has ever changed their technique. If I look at instructional videos on YouTube or see people post short videos of themselves knitting on Instagram, I'm struck by how often people are knitting in the continental style. And when I see the different ways that people knit, the continental style always looks more slick. It looks as if it's just flowing better. My knitting style these days is a form of English knitting, but I have already changed my technique once to get to that. My initial knitting technique, when I first picked up my needles again 4 or 5 years ago, was an incredibly laborious system whereby I would, you know, if you're just doing an ordinary knit stitch, I'd stick right needle through stitch on left needle, and then with my left hand I would pick up my yarn, wrap it round the needle, drop it, take the stitch off the needle, and do it again. So I was literally picking the yarn up and dropping it for every stitch. It's a miracle I ever got to the end of a project. It was just ridiculous. I don't remember learning to knit. I presume it was my mother who taught me. It would have been. And she doesn't knit continental style. She knits English style, which is, I imagine, I just don't know how I develop my technique. But what she succeeds in doing that I never have is wrapping the yarn around her fingers, which is what most people do. I see them looping it around their fingers, and as they move their hand, if you're doing it English style, as you sort of with your index finger, you flick your index finger up and the yarn magically goes around your right hand needle, and also magically moves through your fingers, and it always seems really easy, but whenever I try it, the yarn just stops. I don't know what I do, but I manage about 3 stitches and then the yarn just won't move, because it's just almost not exactly knotted, but it's just pulled itself tight around my fingers, and it's just ridiculous. But what I do now is I hold the yarn in my right hand loosely between my thumb and my index finger, and as I knit, I move my hand, and so I move my hand up towards the end of my right hand needle, the yarn moves with it, the yarn goes neatly around the needle, and the yarn just seems to move as it needs to, but also seems to basically stay between my thumb and forefinger. And generally I found this to be quite a workable way. That is my standard method of knitting, but the reason I moved from my previous pick it up and drop it method was when I started doing socks a lot, and I was knitting a ribbed cuff, and picking up and putting down when you're doing, and that's when I used to do 2x2 rib for cuffs. Now I do 1x1 rib, which is, you know, it's bad enough when you've got a good method of holding your yarn. It was a nightmare before. So that's what made me change. It was a bit of gritting my teeth and getting on with it, but then I really got used to it. But when I'm doing a purl row, if I'm doing stocking stitch flat, when I'm knitting a purl row, I do hold the yarn in my left hand and just whiz along. In fact, I think I purl faster than I knit. So heaven knows what's going on with that. But what I'm really going to try to do is make more of a point of knitting continental style when I'm doing either stocking stitch in the round, as I am for the sole of these socks, or if I'm just knitting a garter stitch flat or whatever it is. The thing I've found before when I've knitted continental style for knit stitch is that my tension has been a little bit dodgy. I've tended to use a sort of form of continental knitting when I've been doing stranded colour work and I've had more yarn than I can hold in one hand. If you're using three colours or more, and you have to, you know, you're not knitting intarsia, you're using all three colours within fairly short order all the time. I found a form of continental works quite well, but then when I'm doing that type of knitting, I'm not sort of zooming along. I'm continually checking that everything's okay, that I'm not tangled on the back, that I haven't got big loops, and sometimes I'm doing wraps anyway. So it kind of works in a way that I haven't found it to work before. But last night I took my knitting with me to my son's swimming lesson, and I was making myself knit continental for the soles of the socks, and matters were improving after a few rounds. But I was knitting English style for the top of the foot because that's got a rib on it, and I did try the continental for rib, but I was in danger of actually knocking stitches off the left hand needle for some reason. I'm clearly extremely cack-handed with this, so I've sort of come to the compromise of English for the rib and continental for the standard knit. Which at least can give your hands a break, because sometimes you can find your hands getting quite achy if you're knitting in a certain way, especially as with socks, you're knitting very small things and you've got very small needles and you don't have to sort of clutch them really tight, but you know, it's more of a fine movement than if you've got a larger needle that you can be possibly a little bit more relaxed with. Also, I love the needle that I use for knitting socks, but it's metal, so the stitches slide more. I think always think there's more chance of losing a stitch off a fine metal needle than there is off bamboo, for instance. So these days I have a combination of techniques, and I wondered if anybody else has consciously changed their technique, and if so, why. Something I've heard about a few times recently is Portuguese knitting, but I'm not quite sure what that is. And the other day I saw a short video on Instagram of somebody knitting backwards. It's a guy, I can't remember his username, I might see if I can track it down, and he was saying in the comments he doesn't know why he does it, it's just what he's always done. So I don't know what that means when he's trying to follow a pattern. I don't even want to think about that. Something else I just wanted to have a chat about was this clanger of my mother's. I posted a photograph of it on my Instagram page the other day, and my husband made a comment that it looks rather rude, and it is a long pink pointy thing, so I suppose if you're in that frame of mind, yes, it does look slightly rude. But I've seen this from its inception, from when it was just a flat piece of pink something, so to me it just looks like major clanger. And at my knitting group last week, mum was starting to seam it, so it was going from being a flat piece of something with strange holes in it to starting to be seamed from top to bottom and being stuffed. And when this clanger is made, it's made up, it's a bit of a penguin shape. If you imagine a penguin and you're seaming from under its beak down its front and down to its feet, because I think clangers are meant to have legs, but this one doesn't have legs, so his feet just kind of come straight out from under his body. And mum was starting to seam, and it became apparent as she went down that she had too much knitting on one side of the seam. And she doesn't know why. She has struggled a bit with this. It's a much finer stitch and a more fiddly project than she would normally do. And as she was going down with this seam, it sort of looked like somebody who hadn't tucked their shirt in properly. So she was saying, what do I do? And I said that from my experience, it matters most to have your seams matching nicely at the top of the seam and at the base of the seam. And if you need to do any fudging, do it somewhere along the way. Don't try and fudge at one end of the seam, because you'll end up with horrible blobs and it'll just all go really badly wrong. I don't think mum was actually using mattress stitch, because she's a seamstress really rather than a knitter. She was using some other stitch. But I find mattress stitch, it's just wonderful on so many levels. And I also find it particularly good if I have screwed up in some way and I've got a little bit too much knitting on one side. So with mattress stitch, you go through the two bars on one side of your seam, and then you go through your two bars on the other side, and then back in where you came out on the first side. But if you've got a little bit of extra on one side that you need to sort of pull in some way so that your ends are going to match, I find I go through my two bars on one side, and on the longer side I'll just go through three bars. And if you do that a little bit spaced out, then you barely notice it. And in fact, for this clanger anyway, I don't know if you've noticed, but lady clangers wear sort of cardigan arrangements and boy clangers wear a breastplate, and Mum's got this perfect material that she's going to use for his breastplate. And of course, that's going to cover up where the knitting has puckered a little bit, or sort of ruched, you know, where she's had to pull in the extra. So that's that should work fairly well, I think. I'm looking forward to seeing him. And well, it won't would be this week. We meet every 2 weeks for knitting group on a Wednesday, so it'll be next Wednesday. It was the theme of our knitting group last week, helping people out. One lady there, she walked in the door saying, "Oh, Heather, I need your help with something. I don't know what's gone wrong with this." And of course, my instant reaction was, "Oh, well, I don't know. I'm not going to know what to do. Don't ask me." But in fact, what happened, I thought, was very interesting. It was one of those situations where actually she did know. She knew what had gone wrong, and she knew what to do to correct it. But it wasn't until somebody else said, "You know, I think it might be that," that she went, "Oh, that's what I was thinking. Yes, I was right." And I think it's really interesting when you come to the realization that you are learning and you can trust your own judgment with knitting. The actual cause of the where she'd gone wrong was that the pattern had some mistakes in it. Now, I've tried writing patterns, and I have, well, for now, I've given up. It's a bit strong, but I'm not doing it at the moment because I'm somebody who can be a little bit sloppy around the edges with things, and I just don't like the idea of putting a pattern out there which isn't really, really detailed and causing people problems, wasting anybody's time because something doesn't turn out as it should. Maybe one day I will do that, but at the moment I don't have the time or the patience. And so mistakes do crop up, you know, designers are only human, even though they test and test. But I was quite surprised. She was knitting from a magazine, a knitting magazine, and there were lots of mistakes in this, really obvious things. And she'd corrected several already. She was showing me through the pattern. She was knitting this really lovely little jacket for a little girl, and it had a vent at the back, in the centre of the back, so that the sort of lower half of the jacket belled out a little bit more, and the upper part was more fitted on the arms and the upper back. It was really lovely, and it was quite complicated doing this venting. She had to put things onto DPNs and move around, and the critical point was that once you'd split the stitches onto DPNs for this bit, your stitch count, as you decreased, remained, everything decreased evenly across the DPNs. And with the decreases that they'd put in, this wasn't happening. And she was saying to me, "It just doesn't make sense. It mathematically, it just can't be right. What am I doing wrong?" So I'm sure I've got the right number of stitches. And I had a quick look at the pattern, and something leapt out at me, and I said, "I think it's that." And they had just put in, at one point in the pattern, too many decreases in one go. And she said, "Oh, you know, I thought it must be that, but then I couldn't see." Anyway, so she did know what to do, but it just needed somebody else to say the same thing, to give her the confidence that she actually understood what she was doing. When I was knitting a jumper for my son 2 or 3 years ago, something wasn't going right with the shaping somewhere. I can't remember the exact details now, but I threw myself on the mercy of Ravelry, and once again, the wonderful people on Ravelry rode to the rescue. But what was really interesting, the thing that stuck in my mind, is a comment that somebody made, and she said, "You're learning to read your knitting. You might not know why it's gone wrong, and you might not know what to do to solve it, but you know it's not right." And, you know, whereas once upon a time I might have carried on and thought, "Oh, it'll be fine." I just knew it wasn't going to be with that particular problem with this jumper. And so I went and asked, and it was fine, and I got sorted out. And as time's gone on, and I've knitted more and more and more things, I've got less and less tolerance for mistakes. And I mean, obviously, if you've sort of 90% finished something and there's a small problem, I may sometimes turn a blind eye to it, depending on what it is. But I'm far more inclined these days either to restart a project if I'm not very far in and I've gone wrong, or to go back and sort something out and, you know, use instructional videos if that's what I need to do. And I'm sort of pleased with myself that I'm not just going to bodge it. And somebody else at Knitting Group had a problem as well. And this is something else that I find interesting. She was knitting a little child's cardigan, you know, a very small, sort of 6-month-old size. And she was saying, I don't understand this instruction for the sleeves. And this comes back to the definition of raglan. I've talked before about what I consider to be a proper raglan jumper or top cardigan and what's not a proper one. And to me, the raglan is to do with the construction. So you have your sleeves and your bodice all threaded onto the same needle from the armpits upwards, and you construct the whole rest of the jumper with everything together from that point, working in the sleeves. And that's what I consider to be a proper raglan construction. Whereas I think some projects that just have that shape of seam, that sort of raglan shape of seam, they term that raglan. And I think this is what was misleading this lady, because it just said words to the effect of join raglan seams. And in my head, as I read that, great screeds of information began to unroll about how I had done this little jumper with a sheep on it recently, because that was a proper raglan construction. And I was thinking, oh my word, you know, that's hardly any information considering what you've got to do here. But then when I actually looked at what she'd done already, the body of the little cardigan was complete, and all you had was the binding off for the armholes. So you had basically a cardigan complete just without arms, and she had the sleeves separately. And so I realised that in fact they had chosen their wording very carefully, and although there was a questionable use of the word raglan, what she needed to do was seam the sleeves into a tube and then just literally attach them at the point where the armholes were on the body. So I think that was a misuse of the term raglan. But what do you think? Am I being a bit too much of a purist? It was certainly pretty confusing in this instance. Well, as I said at the beginning, I'm re-recording this because of the volume problems I had yesterday. Somehow, yesterday, I also managed to find time to talk about knitting bags. But as we're now on nearly 27 minutes, and I haven't even started talking about knitting bags, I think I'll save that for another day. Well, thank you very much for listening. I hope you're not experiencing hiss, or you haven't got me shouting at you or whispering at you. Please let me know, either by leaving a comment here on the website or by commenting on Instagram. I post most days from The Ordinary Knitter on Instagram, so let me know if I still sound like I'm shouting from the far end of a very long tunnel. And I look forward to talking to you again next week. Okay, bye.